Well, good morning, everyone. Yes, great. I saw this meme that made fun of pastors, and it said that, you know, pastor, good morning, everyone. People, good morning, pastor. Oh, come on, you can do better than that. Good morning, everyone. And when I saw it, I was like, that's literally me every single week. That's very awful, and I felt attacked by it, and I've coped for the most part. But my name is Caleb Ives. If you don't know me, it's great to see some of the faces here. I know many people are also engaged online. I'm grateful that you're joining us there. My name's Caleb, and I'm teaching pastor here. And so Pastor Tyler and I, we've been walking through this series over the last several weeks called Foreign Citizens. It's based on the book of 1 Peter. And the big Bible word that you might be run into if you're familiar with some of the stories is the language of exiles. Foreign Citizens is our title we're using. I'll tell you what, this last week has been just another capstone on a long year where I have felt a deep need for exactly what this book has to say to the life of the Christian. I've felt a deep need for that. Foreign Citizens, the title of that, or the idea of that, what we said early on in the series is that a foreign citizen is someone whose primary allegiance and permanent residence is not found in their present location. The idea is that for those of us who belong to Jesus Christ, like me and like you, I'm sure many of us here have also, we belong to him. For us, we relate to this world just in a different kind of way. And no matter where we live, what state, what country we move to, everywhere we go on this earth, we will be living as a foreign citizen. Because our primary allegiance is to our King, Jesus Christ. And our permanent residence is in his perfect presence in new creation of heaven. And so therefore, while I live right now in my present location, that changes the way I relate. It changes the way I interact. It changes the way I think about every single aspect of our lives. And I feel that need. I feel that need, and I also feel the pull of, no matter where you live in the world, I've traveled to a lot of different countries and met with different Christians and seen, and you know what? It's the same challenge everywhere. That there are a million things in this world to look at other than our true leader and our true residence forever, our eternal hope. And so what we're going to do over the course of today is we're going to look at the way of life for those who are foreign citizens. And the way of life is described with one simple term in Peter's language. He describes it as holy. Holy. Let's look at chapter 1, verse 15. We're going to jump right into the passage today. So we're going to work everything out of this idea, this simple passage. And here's what it says in 1:15. You must be holy in everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy. It's a simple verse. In fact, if you wanted to stop listening to me right now, then by the end of the sermon, I'm sure that you could have this verse memorized. All right, but I would rather you waited, memorize it in the afternoon and listen to me for now. All right, you must be holy just as God who is holy. Now, we said that the basic definition of holy is a simple word, different. That holy is different, means different. And now Peter's theology, his understanding here starts with the idea that God is holy. God is holy. God is different. God is other. He is not like any of this world. He's not like our own human instincts. He doesn't think like we normally would. He doesn't act like we normally would. He's just totally different. And that concept, it's kind of easy for us to believe in some ways. If we believe that God is like the creator of the universe, that he created things that we, with our greatest technology and telescopes, we still can't even discover the end of. When we think about that, about God, thinking that God is different, he's holy. It's not too hard of a place to arrive at. But Peter doesn't stop there. And the second aspect of this concept of holy is actually much more challenging for us. When he says, you must be holy, just as God is holy. And the people of God are called to be holy like God. I don't know about you, but over the course of the last week, how many times did you think of yourself as holy? And you don't answer, please, okay? I know you all are wanting to answer me out loud. Please don't, okay? And online, I'm sure you're shouting it out from home. How many times do you think? I'll be honest, myself, looking in the mirror this week, I thought of myself probably too much, but I didn't often think of myself as holy, as different, as other. I didn't look in the mirror and think, that is a holy man right there. It even sounds weird to say it, right? And you think, well, Caleb, you're a pastor. Yeah, well, I still didn't think of myself often in that way. See, but I want to point out something Paul says in Ephesians 4. He says this in Ephesians 4:24. Put on your new nature. Now, he's writing to people who are Christians, who had just ordinary people who put trust in Jesus Christ, his work, and through that had become people who belonged to God. And he says this, put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. Paul is saying there, when you became a Christian, when I became a Christian, we don't become just a better version of me. I become a whole new version of me, a whole new kind of creature. I have a new nature. And that makes some sense, right? That I go from being a stranger to God to being a child of God. I go from being dead in sin to being alive in his spirit. And I'm given God's spirit. That should make me different in some ways. So in that new nature, Paul says, so now put on that way of life. That you were created to be like God. Holy. Holy. But what do you think of? Or who do you think of when you think of someone who is holy? If you're like me, I think of like an ancient prophet. Ancient prophet in his robe with a long beard just standing there like Moses or something, right? Think of that as holy. Or maybe you think of a priest, or you think of a monk or a nun or something like that. Some unique, elite, spiritual individual that's so spiritual and different that they are a holy man, a holy woman. And if that was the case, if that's what it means to be a holy person, then we would assume that Peter's letter must be written to a monastery somewhere or a convent, right? It must be written to people that just don't dress like us. They don't have normal jobs. They live a really weird life, maybe to a seminary where everybody's going to be a pastor. But we already know that when Peter wrote this letter that I know you've been reading every single week diligently, just like me, just kidding. But when we know that this letter, when Peter wrote it, it was to ordinary people. It wasn't to a monastery somewhere in the mountains, somewhere in the desert. It was written to people throughout this region of Asia Minor. Everyday people, Jews and Gentiles alike, who had put trust in this man, Jesus Christ. And here's something we see. What we find is that holiness is not a call for the elite. It's for ordinary people. Well, we can't get away from that. In the scriptures, when Peter says, you must be holy, that command, he is making it to people who work in the marketplace and are part of the trade guild and work in different contracting things. And some of them, they're raising their children at home and teaching and educating, and they work as servants in the households and everyday ordinary people. And Peter says, be holy. Be like God. Okay, whoa, take it easy, Peter. Lighten the burden a little bit, please. Kind of a high bar, right? But being holy is not a call for the elite. It's not just for the pastors, thank God. But it's for everyday, ordinary people. So again, how often this last week did you think of yourself as holy? Oh, Peter says something else really interesting in 1:15. Let's look at this in 1:15, which we already read. But you must be holy in everything you do, just as God who chose you is holy. In what ways is God different than this world? Every way. So in what ways are we, or am I, to be different? Every way. And that's a pretty simple statement, holy in everything you do. If I said, what does that mean? You would say, Caleb, are you, a little simple there, Caleb, holy in everything you do, that's what it means. Yes. But if you read it, even just think of it in reverse, what does that mean? Do everything differently. Every decision, every action, every interaction, every conversation, every private choice, every aspect of my life, do everything differently. So what does it mean? What does it look like for us to live as holy people? You know, we said holy, one of the aspects of the definition of that word is to be different. But another aspect of that word is to be set apart. There's a really big word in the Old Testament and the New Testament called consecrated. It's a really big vocab word, but it just means to be set apart by God. But what does it look like then for us to be people who are set apart? Now, oftentimes this word has been applied to mean separated from, to be separated from the world. And you may have seen this in some Christian, in some of your Christian experience or your experience in the world, that sometimes this idea of set apart is used to think about being separated. It's even where the ideas came for things like monasteries and convents, was the idea of being separated from the world because I'm holy and I'm different. To be separated from. It's this kind of concept that has been used as reasoning behind some of the things like, you know, cult compounds and things like that, or settlements, very strict religious settlements established out in a valley or mountains somewhere. And maybe you've been familiar with those. This idea that to be holy, you have to be set apart. To be set apart must mean that you live your life separated from this world. Separated. You live far away. But my question would be, well, is that really what Peter has in mind when he writes about being holy? I mean, it's clear he doesn't think of holy as being something for just the unique elite people. And also, it doesn't seem like when he thinks about us being holy, he thinks about us moving out away from the world, quitting our jobs and moving out somewhere hidden from everyone else in this world. In fact, look how he describes it in chapter 2 of 1 Peter. He says it this way: "Dear friends, I warn you, as temporary residents and foreigners," that's our key, that's our title of the series, right? As foreign citizens, "to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls." He goes on and says this: "Be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then, even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior and they will give honor to God when he judges the world." So notice this. They will see among your unbelieving neighbors. So Peter, what does it mean for me to be holy? Does it mean I have to be elite? No, it's for everyday people. Okay, Peter, what does it mean for me to be holy? Does it mean I separate myself from everything in my world? No, because being holy is about living differently in full view of my neighbors in my world. The holy life is lived in full view of the world around us. That term here, you see, live properly, your honorable behavior. That word live properly, the Greek, it just means your way of life. The thing, what the way you govern, all the decisions that I make, all the actions I take, all the words that I speak, that I do that differently among the world, and that they would see the way I behave. Now, if you're like me growing up, I remember being told to behave all the time, right? And who told me all the time? My mom. That's right. My mom always telling me to behave. And so I think sometimes we can think of that like with negative connotations, but we all behave some kind of way. We all have a way we manage our everyday life, the way we conduct ourselves in this world. And Peter says that holiness is for everyday ordinary people, and it's about how we live out our everyday ordinary life. Matthew 5:16, Jesus had this exact thing in mind. When he's talking to people, preaching his very first sermon in Matthew 5-7, the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus looks out and he says this. He said, "Let your good deeds shine out for all to see, so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father." So notice here, who does he have in mind that will see? People who don't yet praise our Father. That they would see my good deeds, the way I live my life, and it would bring glory to him. So what does this look like then? And here's the basic idea I want to just drive home today. We think about a holy life, sometimes we think of the elite people. Or we think about a life lived way out in a wilderness somewhere, away from this world with no TVs. That honestly sounds great, sort of. Okay, let's be honest. But that's not what we see here. What we see is this, that the holy life is a normal life lived in a different way. And I encourage you, write that down, think about it, jot it in your phone, whatever. And when you think about a holy life, stop thinking of people like whoever's got the light on them on Sunday morning. Please. Because I'll tell you what, if you think of that as like, I'm not. I struggle, I limp along in this life, and I lean upon the grace of God just like anybody else does. And so does Tyler, so does Nate, so does everybody on the stage, so does Shauna. The holy life is for everybody. Because the holy life is a normal life lived in a different way. And most of the ways that we actually will show the world that God is different, a world that doesn't see God, the way that they will see that God is different is not actually in what we do in here, right? Like, this is, yes, this is holy. This is different. But the world doesn't necessarily see this, right? And most of the ways that the world will see that our God is different is that they will see us being different in our normal, everyday life. So I want you to think just for a moment here. Just think about this for a moment. You can write it down or think about it in your mind and just write it in your brain. Where do you live your normal life? Where do you live your normal life? Where do you work? Where do you go to school? Who do you interact with on a daily basis? Who's in your household? Think about your normal life. So when we think about holiness or being holy, we do too much of moving that inside here and into our small groups and our devotion time. And we separate it from our everyday, ordinary routines and relationships. But that's actually where the Bible aims all its teaching on being holy, is in my everyday routines and relationships of my life. And Peter's going to take aim at all those. We don't have time to read all of it today, but we're going to look at a few examples. And Peter's going to take aim at every different category or aspect of people's lives. And he's going to say, hey, you can be holy there. You can be holy there. You can be holy there. And he's going to start. We're going to look at this in 1 Peter chapter 2, 18 and 19. And here's what we see here. He talks about, and you're going to find, in Peter, when he's writing to the world, this Roman Empire, their culture is different than ours. It's a different culture than ours, different cultural structures. But I want you to hear overall what he's saying here. So he first speaks to the people who were the lowest social, economic, and work class in their entire society. The lowest wage, the lowest position in the culture. The people who were least likely to think that when I go to work, I can glorify God. When I go to work, my life is about representing God. The people least likely to think that. He speaks to the slave class of this church and says this: you who are slaves must accept the authority of your masters with all respect. Do what they tell you, not only if they are kind and reasonable, but even if they are cruel. That's a hard thing to say. Now, we don't have this same type of structure the empire had back then that they lived in, but we have cruel employers, right? We have difficult work environments. And he's saying, look, in your environment that you're in, there is a way to glorify God. For God is pleased with you when you do what you know is right. When you do what you know is right and patiently endure unfair treatment. Moving on to verse 21. For God called you to do good, even if it means suffering, just as Christ suffered for you. Nice and easy stuff, right? On a Sunday morning, be encouraged. All right. Do what you know is right. Do what God called you to do. The good God called you to do that. Where? At work. Even if you're the lowest ranking person in that workplace, do what God has called you to do. And what has he called you to do? What is right and what is good. And in that, you are holy and you are different. In Ephesians 6, Paul writes to the same group of people, the same population group, which, by the way, most of the church, as it started up in the world, most of the church in the Roman Empire was actually made up of this lowest class, the least, the last, the lowest of their culture, society. And he writes to the slaves and says this: try to please them all the time, not just when they are watching you. As slaves of Christ, do the will of God with all your heart. Work with enthusiasm as though you were working for the Lord rather than for people. Do the will of God as though you're working for the Lord. When? When I'm at work. So here's what we see. Peter and Paul both saying, this is what he's saying. My work life is my holy life. A holy life is not restricted to what I do in these four walls, or not restricted to what I do under the covering of River Run Church or a small group or my Bible study. My holy life and my work life are intertwined. He goes on and he talks about our relationships. And Peter specifically aims at the closest relationship people have, which is the marriage relationship. But if you're not married, then think about this in terms of in our closest human relationships, where it's most challenging to actually live a way that honors God, it's most challenging to be holy and different because the pressure is built up in those relationships. You can't hide from them. And here's what we see in chapter 3, verse 1 and 2. In the same way, you wives must accept the authority of your husbands, then even if some refuse to obey the good news, your godly lives will speak to them without any words. They will be won over by observing your pure and reverent lives. And I don't want to get tangled in this. This isn't the sermon on marriage today. But here's what it is a sermon about. It's a sermon about being holy. And what does it look like? And he says, hey, wives, even if you have husbands that don't know Christ, they don't follow him, your everyday, ordinary, walking around life is an opportunity to do that relationship differently in a way that honors and values the other person. He doesn't stop there. He goes on in chapter 3 to then talk to the husbands. And here's what he says there. In the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. So your normal life. She may be weaker than you are, but she's your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Peter here is critiquing the way in which the world in that empire, the world of that day, related to one another in marriage. And he says, hey, honor one another. Do marriage differently. Be a spouse differently than the world around you does this. Because as you do, you're honoring me and you're representing me to the world and you're representing me to your spouse. So here's what Peter is saying. No, regardless, whether you're married or not, here's what he's saying is that my relational life is my holy life. My closest relationships, that is where I live my holy life. My work, my relationships. And then he has one more thing he focuses into in chapter 4, verse 3 and 4. Peter says this, you've had enough in the past of the evil things that godless people enjoy. That's just people without God. Their immorality and lust, their feasting and drunkenness and wild parties, and their terrible worship of idols. Let me just say, this whole list right here is a description of the social life of the ancient Roman world. Okay, this is a description of the social life that everyone in the church had either lived in or their friends and family did these things. This is what they did. Idols were everywhere. There was always these big festivals that were filled with all kinds of immorality and wickedness and corruption. He says, hey, you've done enough of that in the past. So don't do that any longer. And then he goes on and says this in verse 4. Of course, your former friends are surprised when you no longer plunge into the flood of wild and destructive things they do, so they slander you. Your former friends are surprised. I was thinking about this verse because it's interesting that what we don't see is he says, ditch all your friends. You become a Christian, ditch all your friends. But he does say, change the way you conduct your life. Live differently so that your friends see it. Because otherwise your friends wouldn't be surprised and they wouldn't slander you if they didn't become eyewitnesses to a changed person. To a changed person. So here's what he's saying there. Peter says, not only is your work life your holy life, and your relational life is your holy life, but your social life is your holy life. It is my holy life. That all these things that make up my everyday life, that is my holy life. And Peter says it's in those places that the God who is different has called his people to be different, that the world would see a different kind of God and a different kind of way and a different kind of grace. But as we think about that, it's like, okay, then what actually defines a holy life? If I don't quit my job the second I become a Christian so I can be more holy, if I don't, you know, abandon these relationships so I can be more holy, or if I don't even like get rid of all these social relationships so I can be holy, then what actually defines the holy life that is seen by the world? And what we see is that the defining of the holy life is not about where we go. It's really about how we are led, how we live. And here's what we see. We've been talking about being foreign citizens or being exiles. And what we find is this, that foreign citizens are holy because they live under different leadership. Foreign citizens are holy because they live under different leadership. The leadership of my life is the person of Jesus Christ. It's the Holy Spirit, God's Spirit that dwells in me and leads me and guides me. Through Scripture and through His Spirit, He leads my life. And so I am under different leadership. So my neighbor and I, we actually still hang out. We still talk. We still live in the same house. We still, maybe the people I work with, we still work there. I still play golf with these people. I still go play basketball with these people. But when I do these things, I have a different leader now in my life. And that has a billion applications in my life. I'm still married. I'm still in this relationship. But now I do this relationship differently because something else, someone else is leading me. And it is trust and obedience to that different kind of leader that actually is what leads me to be holy, to be holy. Now listen to me. I hate the idea of being weird. I hate it. Like, I'm a pastor's kid. I think some of you know that I'm a pastor's kid, born and raised. And I had two major goals in my adolescent life. My two major goals was to be good with God and not have the world know about it. All right? That's my two goals. And when I say the world, all I mean is my peers, 100%. That's all I mean. All right. I want to be good with God. Therefore, I want to go to church Sunday morning. I want to go to church Wednesday night for youth group. And I want to go on the mission trip every summer. But I don't want any of my peers to know I do those things. Because around them, I want to be cool. I want them to think I am awesome. By the way, I was terrible at that. I was not cool at all. But I tried. I had a few friends, like three. Okay? All right. But that's what I wanted the most in the world. In fact, like when I thought about my life, the driving goal of my life was to say, hey, how can I make sure to guard these two things? How can I not have the way I want to live in the world actually corrupt that I'm good with God still? And how can I make sure being good with God doesn't affect my reputation in the world? It's exhausting, to be honest with you. I still remember the day. There's like a little laboratory study of my life where I was waiting outside the school where my dad always picked me up from school. And I remember I'm waiting there. I'm talking with my friends, you know, being cool, my swagger going and things like that. And I remember and my dad comes walking down the sidewalk towards me, which is very weird. Usually he pulled up in the car. I got in and we drove away. But he walked up and I thought, why is he walking? This is already, I feel weird. Like, their parents don't walk up. Why am I? My dad's walking up. I feel embarrassed. And I remember the worst words he's ever said to me in my life. He leaned down to me and said, Caleb, I brought the bus. Now, you don't understand why that was so awful to me. I brought the bus. But here's the deal. Our church, remember my dad's pastor, our church had a bus. Full-size school bus. And on the side of the school bus, it said the name of our church. And remember, my number one goal was that my school and all my peers would never know that I was a pastor's kid. They'd never know I was a Christian. They'd never know I went to church. And now I felt this horrible conflict. Right? And he said, it's okay. I parked it in another spot. And that other spot he parked it in was in a giant open parking lot with only the bus in the middle of it. Literally. And along the road, and I could still see the moment where I looked and around that corner, every school bus comes right through there. That all my friends are on those school buses, and I'm looking at my school bus, and it says the church's name on it. And I'm the only rider. And I'm thinking, oh, dear God, deliver me, Lord. Like, just right now, come back, return, or take me to heaven. I don't care what you do. And I remember strapping my backpack a little tighter and then just getting this burst of courage and sprinting full speed, diving into the bus, laying in the seat, and telling my dad, tell me when we're outside the city limits. And I laid in the seat until we got outside of town, and I thought no one will know that I'm in here anymore. And then I finally sat up with rage in my eyes at my dad, who had forced my two worlds to collide. So I tell all that to say to you, listen, I don't actually want to be weird. I want, no matter where I'm at, I want people to like me. I want to seem normal. I want to seem just like everybody else. But when I follow Jesus, what I find is I'm not like everybody else. And this person right here that really wants to fit in everywhere, what I have found is my world does not need me to be the same. My world desperately needs me to be different because that's the only way that my world that I say I love can see the beauty of Jesus. That's it. It's only through me being different that people will know that my God is different. And also I find for me that the best life is actually the one I live trusting and obeying God and living the life I'm called to. It's the different life because when I'm doing that, I recognize and I feel the reality. This is what I'm created for. I'm created to live life in relationship with this God and representing him that people experience something different when they spend time around me. And even as my flesh kicks and screams, I'm fighting that to say, no, I want to live the way I was created to live. Different than I would live in my own strength. And here's how Peter describes living this life under different leadership. He says this in 8 through 11 of chapter 3. He says, be tender-hearted. Not based on your personality type. It's like, oh, come on. Be tender-hearted. Keep a humble attitude. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That is what God has called you to do. What does that mean? This is where God is leading you, always. So I go to the same places, I live in the same world, but in this world I live, I am living with a different heart, a different attitude, and a different way of responding in conflict and when people insult me. I'm following the example, the leadership of my God. He goes on and continues on in that passage and says this, for the scriptures say, and he quotes here from Psalm 34, if you want to enjoy life, if you want to see many happy days, keep your tongue from speaking evil. Ouch. And keep your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Search for peace and work to maintain it. Peter says, look, if you want to have a really the best version of life, then it's a life that is radically different from your world. No matter where you live on earth, no matter what government you live under, it'll be radically different from this world. Because it'll be marked by a different heart, a different attitude, a different way of responding to my enemies, a different way of speaking, a different way of interacting. Because through that, the world will see that my God is different. In chapter 4, verse 2, Peter summarizes the main point of this, and we're about to wrap up. He says this, you won't spend the rest of your lives chasing your own desires, but you will be anxious to do the will of God. Peter says, look, in every moment of my life, and Peter would say it about himself, there are these two realities. There are my desires and the will of God. And my whole world says, this is what life is about. I feel this way, I want this thing, and I go after this thing. And yet, there's this different way. This way that lays aside my personal desires and trusts that the will of God is actually the best for me. And he says, that is the holy life. That's the different life. The different life this world needs to see. This different life that honors the God that loves us and chose us. It delights his heart. And, you know, as we do that, and as every moment of our life, we have this opportunity to really make a choice between my desires and the will of God. For me, it calls to mind that my entire life, my eternal life hinges on the person of Jesus Christ, who in one of his last prayers before the cross says to the Father, nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. That Jesus, in his humanity, does not want to go to the cross, doesn't desire that, doesn't want to experience that suffering. Talk about experiencing being different. He's going to be killed for it. He doesn't want to, but he chooses the will of the Father over his own flesh, his own humanity desires. And every day, in every moment, we have set before us these two opportunities. And what we see is this, that the holy life seeks to honor God and represent him in every situation. That a holy life seeks to honor and represent God in every situation. That I say, okay, God, in this moment, in this situation, how can I best reflect you? And God, how can I best bring delight to your heart? Because you have redeemed me. You've redeemed me. I really think in our lives, where we started at this morning, I really feel like we need to recapture the holiness of the everyday and ordinary moments of our life. Whether it's the moments where I am tucking my kids in bed at night, or sitting at a table looking at financial things and trying to structure my life and plan for things and navigate hard decisions, or whether it's in my workplace dealing with a conflict or trying to resolve something there, whether it's driving down the road or on the golf course, that every moment of my life is an invitation to be holy, to experience holiness. That every single one of us, if you belong to God, if you belong to God, then you belong to one who is different. What we see is this, that being holy isn't about leaving the world we live in. It's not about leaving this world. But being holy is about living differently in the world we have. As we come to the end of the message today, we're going to go into another song of worship. And it's called Good Grace. And here is what we see. What we see throughout the scriptures, what we see throughout the last 2,000 years of the church, what we see is the people who have most embraced the life that is different are the people that were most captured by how different our God is. By how different our God is, that there's no one like him, there's nothing that compares to him. And what we see in the scriptures and what we see throughout the last 2,000 years is that what is most different about God is the different way he loves, the different kind of grace, the different kind of mercy, the different kind of truth that is found in him. And I think we can sometimes we can have a very, like, we live in the United States, so our experience of this life is very much in the United States. But again, as I mentioned, I've been in different countries and interacted with Christians all over the world. Here's what I want us to do in the next few minutes. I want us just to join with all the Christians under all kinds of governments, in all kinds of situations, in prison cells, and meeting in secret house churches, and being abused and fired and suffering all over the world. I want us to join them for the next few minutes and shut this world out. And look at Jesus. Because the people who have been most consumed with how different Jesus is, that have been most free to actually live life differently, if we view the world the same way as everyone else does, then we will live in the world the same way everyone else does. But that's not what we are created for. And I know that my neighbors, my world, my family, my friends, they need Caleb to be different. But I only will live that way if my heart is captivated with the holiness of my God. So I want you to consider just for a moment right now. First of all, if you don't know this beautiful, different God expressed in the person of Jesus, don't leave here without talking to us about that. We want to. But if you do know him, then consider, as you go into this week in your everyday, ordinary world, where is it that you can honor him? And when is it that you can represent him and live this different kind of life? Let's pray and then go into the song together. Lord Jesus, you are beautiful. Your grace is just different. Your love is just different. Your holiness, you are just other. You are not like this world. And so, God, we thank you for that. And we fix our eyes upon you. And as we do that, Lord, may we reflect our different God by living as a different kind of people in this world. We thank you for your presence here with us. That, God, you go way beyond what Caleb could ever say in his own strength or what any of us could ever muster in this hour and a half. Lord, you go way beyond that, and we welcome you, Holy Spirit, to change us, have your way in our hearts, and shape the way we live our life. There's a statement I make to my daughter, Faith, my youngest daughter, every night, and I say this to her, and I've said it to you before, and she could quote it if she was here next to me, but she'd be nervous. You were created by God. You were created to be loved by him. You were created to know him and to trust him with all of your heart. And then we always say this, because when you trust him, that is the best way to live. Not the easiest, but it's the best way to live.